folks. I'm Emily.
And I'm Elt.
And I have given up on perla beads because you have to iron, and I object to a woman having to iron something, even if it's for a craft that I choose to do, because I don't want to be stuck inside some stupid gender role that someone assigned me. Also, irons are very confusing, and sometimes they burn your hand. So I'm sticking with knitting instead. I think needles are much safer than hot irons.
Also because she tried to get the cleaners to do the ironing part for her, and they were like, no, we don't do this. So it became, there was a mess, and we didn't carry her out of there, but it got kind of crazy. That's why we don't go outside, Emily.
Well, I thought it might be nice outside because I really like fall. And I like to step on crunchy leaves, but sometimes you step on crunchy leaves and underneath are squishy worms and it's kind of gross. So it's probably safer to be inside.
So gross. And also I told Emily I'd be knitting with her, but really what I meant is I'm going to try to figure out how we can use these needles as self-defense weapons.
Oh, multitasking.
Yeah. So she's knitting and I'm self-defensing.
Well, you know, that sort of actually leads into the books we're talking about today, this series. By the way, guys, if you aren't impressed yet by our
segue abilities,
segues, then you're wrong, because they're pretty fantastic. So the series we're talking about today is the Dear Canada series. We'll also probably talk a little bit about the Dear America series. They're kind of the same thing. There's also, the Dear Royals?
The Royal Diaries and the My Name is America series. They're all from Scholastic. There's bunches of them. It's probably a little bit over 100 altogether, and they are fantastic, and they are books that every kid should read. Well, some are better than others, yes. But yeah.
But the idea of them, so the reason why this was a really good segue is because all of these books talk about different periods in either American or Canadian, or the Royal series happens in mostly Europe, because that's where the Royals were, but I think also in other countries, yeah. And it's diaries of kids, usually between the ages of 11 and 15, and it chooses different eras of history, and it gives you a peek into anywhere from a year to several years of their life and what it was like. So it's supposed to give kids, it's sort of a way of learning history without picking up a history book. There's actually someone who says that the best way to learn history is by reading a biography, because you get the idea of what the history was like, but it's more specific because you're seeing how someone actually lived. And that's what these books attempt to do, but in a very easy to read way. And what I like about it is they're all written as diaries. And diaries, that means that even if there's three diary entries on a page, it's split up. So it's not full of text, and the font is big, so they're very easy to read through, and you do learn about what it was really like for pioneers going west or coming from England to Canada when it was freezing, and how they had to get their own food and make their own clothes.
They're very good glimpses. Yeah. I think they're very good introductions for kids, and a lot of the series, some of the 1600 is probably the earliest that you see, because also more as far as the Dear Canada and the My Name is America is the boy, are boys, and Dear America are girls, and Dear Canada is also girls. So those three, they don't really go earlier than 1600, some maybe-ish, but because that's usually, that's about the time of settling. I think one or two might, but then the latest one I saw was 1960s, but that was one, because it was one for the hippie movement. There's a lot of World War II is really the latest that it goes. There's one or two Vietnam ones, but most of them stay within, a lot of them are 1800s, early 1900s, a few late 1700s, and they're just a really good glimpse. So I like to think of these more as gateways almost to times in history, mm-hmm. to say, hey, this thing happened or this thing existed. It touches upon also each author, because Scholastic put out all these series, but then each author kind of wrote about either a time or place that they connected to. So it's kind of a little bit more personal for that author. But that also gives us a great variety of, because who would write about cod fishing? Right. Oh, we didn't specify. This Dear Canada one is called Winter of Peril. Oh, sorry, that's on you. Or were you saying that? Whatever. Winter of Peril by Jan Andrews. And it's about cod fishing. Who would ever read a book about cod fishing?
Right. But by reading it, I had no idea. So the premise is this girl who's comes from a wealthy family. She, her father wants to be an adventurer. He wants to be like Robinson Crusoe. So he and his wife and then the daughter go on this ship from England to Newfoundland or Newfoundland. I think Newfoundland is how you pronounce it. And Canada for a year to live it out and to see what it's like. And, but they go on this cod fishing ship is what, is that how they get there? Because apparently there are, or there were, there was a bunch of cod in England. So they would come, or in Canada. So they would go from England to Canada. And then there was the fishing season for several months a year. And then they would bring it back to Europe, which it's really impressive to think that people several hundred years ago, without the technology we had, without the communications technology specifically and the travel technology, went that far to get food that they could then sell. And it was actually more economical and it was worth it for these people to risk life and limb for the money that they could make selling this cod. I just found that so impressive.
Yeah, so that's the one thing. Well, oh, well, we didn't do our ratings yet. But we do our scales, though. But that's the one thing also is that a lot of these books, there is a lot of death and sickness and things like that in this book. But that's because you're reading about pioneers who settled and opened up the land. And it's just, they don't go into a lot of detail, which is good. And usually, you know, even with all the fight, you know, whether there's a war or whatever, they don't go into that much detail. They kind of touch upon it. But again, that's also why it's kind of like a gateway. Like, you have to know that these things happen. We're not going to just pretend like everything's all rosy, you know, when you're trying to travel across the prairies or going across, you know, that's why it's called Winter of Peril, this one. They had to survive the winter and they were not prepared.
Yes. And not everyone does survive. And so this specific one, and surely in the future, we're going to talk about more of these because as we said, there's 100 and they're pretty much all we're talking about or more than 100. Anyway, there's a lot of them, but we gave it, the violence, we gave it a 2. Language is a 0, though. The language is very clean. And romance was a 0.5. There was a little hint of a crush. And also a woman gives birth, which I don't know if we've talked about birth before. And I don't know that that necessarily falls into romance, except that the interesting thing in this one is that the girl, Sophie, she's the main girl, when the baby is being born, the other women don't let her come near because I don't think they want her to see how a baby is born because this girl is so sheltered that not only does she not know about sex, she's 12, she doesn't have to know about sex necessarily, but she doesn't even know, I don't think she even knows, like little kids now know, oh, the baby's in the mommy's tummy and then it comes out of the tummy. They don't know how it got in the tummy, but they know it's there and then it comes out. I don't think she even knows that.
No, she's really, really naive and sheltered. Super, super. Which is also part of her growth as a character, which she decides, like, I don't want to be as out of it as my parents, basically. Because the parents, like, are living in a different world almost. Like, the father, I'm going to be an adventurer. And it's like, you're starving to death. You don't have food. You don't know what you're doing. Except help from people who know what they're doing. And she realizes, we got to be part of the build, like, we got to all help each other out kind of thing. We've got to be, I can't just decide I'm going to live in my bubble of a life. She's very much where the dad lives in his bubble. And the mom also kind of like, she can't figure out how to live without the maid. That's one of the first scenes. Like, she doesn't know how to take off her dress by herself.
Yeah. Well, they come, so Sophie and her family are from an upper class family in England. And I have read enough of history to know that in the upper classes, even, and actually through England, up even through the 50s, you didn't have to be, almost everyone had a maid, even if you weren't rich. Everyone had a girl to come in to cook and clean. It was just sort of what you did. Right. But especially back then, or especially for the class that Sophie was from, I mean, she indicates that her father wears a white powdered wig and they had servants to do everything. And Sophie herself was not really raised by her parents. She was born and then there are nannies to take care of her, and she's allowed to come hang out with the adults every once in a while, but it's very, they didn't do anything for themselves because they were, I mean, they, his father, her father is an aspiring writer. Her uncle is engaged in business, but the day-to-day doings are all handled by servants until they get to this land and they see the other people doing stuff. And Sophie figures out, as you said, oh, everyone everyone has to do stuff if you want to live.
Yeah, and you can't live your life sheltered. Such a,
right.
Yeah. Well, that's also, well, going back for a second, that, okay, so this book is takes place in the 1700s. It's 1721. And so, like, that's also part of the historical thing that also, that I call it, like, it's like a glimpse in the gateway, because they do drop that the father wants to be Robinson Crusoe. You now know that that was around at that time. So they do things like that to also, it seems like the authors have done pretty decent research on, they'll use certain language of the time and describe things in a certain way. That also, it makes it a little bit more real. And these are, I think for the most part, the series is it's pretty, it's middle grade. I don't know if the certain ones I'll give to an 8-year-old, certain ones I wouldn't give to an 8-year-old. But 10, 11, definitely 11, 12 can definitely read them. Some of them, I mean, the scales are not the same for all of them, even though, again, they all have like a lot of death and sickness and things like that in it. But they definitely show you people, like hardworking people who built, right? Which is so important for people to see, like, I'm not going to be like a quote unquote, like a white glove person. I'm going to get my hands dirty and I'm going to be part of it. Like, I'm going to raise things up. I'm going to be able to stand on my own feet. And even though, like, oh, I have friends or people, even like a love interest to lean on, I'm going to be a contributor, right? I'm not just going to take, I'm going to give also. I'm going to be part of building, which is great stuff. I think for these kids to see is that, first of all, things didn't happen overnight and they didn't just, like, you know, things didn't appear. Usually also because you're reading books, a lot of times if you see that there's antagonism between, any of these settlers and any of an American tribe, usually the person writing the diary is always like, oh, why do we not, you know, whoever didn't like the Native Americans, they're all evil. And the person writing the diary is always so like, I don't get what's wrong with them. So like they do kind of make them a little bit purer in that sense. But this is all this is all real stuff. So you can run away from it or you cannot like it, but this is the way it was. And it's good. I think it's just great for kids that they see that it's just real. It's just more real for them, I think. And again, it gives them an opening. If they're like, oh, I do want to know more about cod fishing, because they do. They describe the process of the cod fishing, or like, yeah, I want to know more about the 1700s. Things like that. This is a good starting point for them. Like, okay, now where else can I look? So that's why I also am very partial to these series. Officially, I'm rereading them, even though I never knew the Dear Canada ones existed. I always knew about the Dear America, My Name is America, and Royal Diaries. I never knew about the Dear Canada ones. So it was a great...
Me neither.
It was serendipity when I found out. So now I'm trying to collect them because so many of them are out of print now, which is so annoying.
Oh.
So I'm trying to hunt them down.
Yeah. I loved these books when I was younger because I loved historical fiction. There was a period I went through in my life that all I read was historical fiction.
Yeah.
And these were so...
Yeah, I love historical fiction, and as a writer, it's so unfortunate because I wrote a historical fiction and it hasn't been picked up yet because a lot of people are like, historical fiction doesn't sell in YA, and you're like, why? I know YA is very, very heavy on fantasy and it's very, very heavy in contemporary, and they've been trying to work buff like on sci-fi. You got some thrillers also, but fantasy and contemporary are really the main genres of YA. But it's like, why should historical fiction also? It's like, teens will read historical fiction. If it's a good story, they'll read it. So, and it doesn't matter where it's taking place. And especially if it's older, they like sword fighting and all that kind of stuff, right? They're not, oh, I can't read it because there's no telephones. They'll read it. Like, trust the teens to read it.
Yeah, you put enough romance in there, they'll read it. That's for sure.
Yeah. Well, that too. But even without it, though, if it's a good, again, if it's a good story and especially showing just good characters or development and stuff like that, it's got to be a good story. Like, don't get stuck on the genre. But I am partial to historical fiction because they are getting something out of it besides for either good lines or you know, some moral lesson. But they're getting real knowledge out of it. So
exactly. Yeah.
So
Well, I was just wanted to comment because we talked about a lot of death. I think is there one about. Like the Donner Party, maybe. There's one about the Triangle Shirtwaist Factory fire. So there are a lot of things. This one in particular, if you read, we did give it a 2 for violence because there's some spousal abuse.
Yeah.
So that is...
It's referred
to. It's still not near...
Yeah, it's not seen, but it's referred to. So that's kind of bad. Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, it's pretty bad, actually.
it's... it's bad, but it's so real. Like in this one, there's the antagonism between the settlers and the tribe, which is the Beothuk, Beothuk, Beothuk. Yeah, I don't know exactly how you pronounce it, which was apparently, oh, the other good thing about these books is that in the back, they'll give an extra couple pages of information.
Yeah, the historical notes.
You know, and maps like, and figures, historical notes. Yeah. So it really can spark your interest. And then, of course, these days, any kid can just go, great, let me pull up the internet and, you know, hopefully find something accurate. And there's also fighting between the Anglicans and the Catholics in this one, because the Irish are Catholic and the others are not. Oh, that's an... So, I just think that's interesting because it shows that people fight and people have a hard time getting along, and that's sort of always been, and it really takes a lot of effort to not be that way.
Yeah, or to find a, or to bridge. That, yeah.
Right. And I just think that's important to remember that it's, unfortunately, that's how humans are, and they fight sometimes, a lot of times, for no reason. But it's something to be aware, and if it's happened for a long time, then something to be aware of and something that we know we can work on, I guess.
Especially, they're fighting for survival. So when you find things that are more important than I believe you believe, and not in the sense of like, oh, your beliefs aren't important, but there's a common ground somewhere that's more important than personal stuff. So it's either
right.
a common ideal that we can agree on to strive for, or here it's survival. And there are ways to say, you know, this is my life and this is your life. And can we figure out a way to like live side by side, not condemnation? You know, you see that people are fleeing from certain situations. There are ways to make that happen.
Right.
And you can find, you'll find it if you look for it, but you have to want it.
Yeah.
Yeah.
They also show a lot of these characters are very religious. Because yeah. usually because of the time that they live in, but they're going to church on a weekly basis or synagogue, because some of them are Jewish, and they're reading their Bible, and they turn to God a lot of times, you know, because people are dying in the snow and they don't have enough food. So they turn to God and ask. And it's not, I guess it depends upon the character. In this one, I think Sophie has a relationship with God, and she feels bad when she hasn't read her Bible, and then she turns to him and asks questions because she doesn't understand, like, oh, why don't we like the Irish people, but also the Irish people are Catholic, and I think it's just very honest. That's how people's relationship with religion often is. It's not easy, but that doesn't mean it's not something worth having and working on.
Yeah, or it doesn't always have to be fire and brimstone. It could just be like, I don't understand this part. Or just like being frank about it. Yeah. It is. There's so, again, each one is different. So you kind of have to, you know, see what age each one is really appropriate for. But overall, I think Scholastic, this is probably one of the greatest things they came out with. All these series. They're so good. They're so, so good. So big fans. I should actually go back to the stack. I still have a whole stack that I'm supposed to be rereading, and I've only made a dent in it with about 20, and there's still like 80 more for me to read. So maybe I should just go and take care of that now. That's my afternoon now.
Oh, and then once you finish it, we can split the stack down the middle, and then we'll swap, because they're pretty quick and easy to read.
Yeah, that's true too. Well, especially when you're an adult. Yeah. You can burn through it pretty quickly. Yeah. Yeah. Fine. We have our activity for the next couple of days lined up.
Plus knitting.
Oh, yeah. And self-defensing or ing.
Yes.
Awesome. All right.
Thanks for listening.
See you next time, everyone.
Oh My Word podcast is brought to you by the Pearl Clutching Basement Dwellers at Oh My Word. Follow us on Instagram for updates at Oh My Word Podcast, or like and subscribe wherever you listen to podcasts. For full episode notes and detail, visit eltenenbaum.com. Music is by Tim Burke. Sound is by Gabriel Yaffe. See you next time.